with that, I'll ask you to please help me to welcome to our stage a very special man, Al.
My name is Al. I'm a grateful alcoholic. It's a privilege and an honor to be here tonight. It's a privilege and an honor actually to be an Alcoholic Anonymous. If you're fairly new, if you have 2 hours, that's a miracle, because most of us don't make it here. So, and stick around until you realize that, I know as I say that, some people are thinking, what's a miracle? Again, if the fact that you're here and you're not drinking, that is a miracle for alcoholics. And it's a privilege, again, to be here, because to stand here tonight, you know, I introduced myself as Al, a grateful recovering alcoholic, but who you have before you tonight is a composite of many, many, many people along my recovery journey. I can see a lot of the faces out there that are no longer on this planet, but they're at that great meeting in the sky. And so when I say composite, that means, you know, I can think of the Marys, the Louise, the Rons, the Johns, the Bobs, the Bills, the Jose's, many of them that enabled me to be here tonight. And so, yes, I am Alex J. Recovering Alcoholic, but I'm a composite. And you know, as a composite, today in my recovery, I try to represent that which they gave so freely to me. And one of those things that they gave was service and responsibility. I remember them taking me to service meetings and asking me to be on cleanup committees, coffee maker, greeter, washing ashtrays, all those things. And when I was new, you know, I didn't have a clue what that had to do with staying clean and sober. And the old timers taught me that I was learning to give unconditionally. And for that, I'm very, very grateful, because, you know, truly when you're new, they ask you to do things you don't understand, especially when I was in charge of putting out ashtrays and washing them. My attitude was, I didn't even smoke, you know. Why should I wash ashtrays? So you see right there, that selfishness, self-centered, self-will came out right away. In other words, there was nothing in it for me. Why would I wash an ashtray? And my response said, you know, that's keeping you alive. And of course, when you're new, you think, what is he talking about? And I understand today what Ryan T. was talking about, because he's part of my composite in my recovery. You know, I came from a very small battalion in the sticks of Arkansas. There's about 11 or 12 of us, and a couple of us are still here, so I appreciate you. I think we had 11 or 12 of us, too many to remember. But I can remember very early on watching uncles and grandparents drink, and I thought it was funny. And I loved how it seemed like when that, because we made a lot of stuff out on the pine trees out there, that stuff in the quart mason jars, that some of you are too young to understand what a mason jar is. But the quart mason jar, just threw a top on. We made some shine in the sticks of Arkansas. And I remember watching when my uncles and grandparents, when they drank it and that stuff hit the right spot, how they became funny and humorous. And I couldn't make connections until about 14. At 14 is when I was introduced to that. And I remember that warm feeling, that magic. I found the magic wand. And it was good. And I remember, you know, I was raised, we were in church, I don't want to say too much, but just about 6 or 7 days a week. And a little obsessive there, but it didn't harm me, for sure. And I remember in the preaching to talk about talking the spirit and talking to tongues and all that stuff. I remember the day that shine, I hit that shine, and it hit me. And I really was, I started speaking an unknown language. But there was other guys that were speaking an unknown language. And And you see that still today. You go in the bar, you wonder why these two people are saying stuff that it makes no sense. Because it's unknown language, it really is. All you have to do is hit that stuff, hit enough of it, and you'll start talking the same language. And it makes no sense, but it is a language. And that's what happens when they shine kicks in. You know, my uncles my grandpa, we had these conversations about nothing, but somehow we were all getting it at the same time. And everybody else just sort of looked and rolled their eyes. So that was my introduction to alcohol. And from there, of course, we had to drink the best stuff up from moonshine. That was Strawberry Hill. Old Turkey. And some of that good stuff. And I remember I was a drunk from the get-go because I passed out the first time I drank, and I passed out the last time I drank, and I passed out every time in between that. I did not know how. I did not have a recovery. I did not have an alcohol throttle on me that would somehow regulate when you got a little tipsy, you stop and you act civilized. I didn't have that. My throttle was broken. When I went out to drink, I went out to get drunk. That's all I knew. And by God's grace, and I haven't drank March 1st to be 32 years, by God, thank you. Thank you. But by God's grace, the only thing I still know is if I drink, if I can't get totally into that seventh dimension, I don't want to touch the stuff. And so that tells me I'm an alcoholic. See, some people, after they get a week or day or a few years of sobriety, they want to see if they can have a drink. To me, that right there is insane, to have a drink. And again, if I can't get totally blitzed, so I talk to myself, being in cuffs, waking up in the hospital, then I don't want to touch the stuff. See? And that's an alcoholic, because that's the only thing I understand. And so, you know, a lot of that stuff I have out there today, they did not have it when I quit drinking. And it comes to my mind, it's like, you know, I wonder what that would taste like. But again, I cannot taste anything. If I can't get plastic, I do not need to go out there. And again, one is too many, a thousand is enough. And I always go for the thousand. But at age 18 or so, I joined the military because it was an option. Either you sign up, raise the right hand, or you can get in this little cave we call the jail back in Arkansas. And it was a little cave out in the middle of nowhere. And so I decided to say I do. And of course, I joined the branch of the service I used to watch on television, the drunken sailors. You know, because I used to watch those type of movies and Steve McQueen, those guys, and they're crackerjack and drunk, and I liked that image. And so therefore, I joined. I left the 6th of Arkansas, vowing never to return. Back here, they have mosquitoes inside the 747. And your body at night is a target all over. And so I vowed never to return to that. So I joined the Navy, and I know today that that was part of the process that my higher power, whom I choose to call God, had for me. I know that today. Because again, if I had stayed in Arkansas, I have no doubt I'd be dead or doing life. Because not only did I get drunk when I drank, I got super, super crazy. Super crazy. And people didn't understand because truly, I was a quiet, easygoing, likable, nice guy when I wasn't drinking. I really was. But when I drank, I was super crazy. I didn't care about me, you, and the days out there. I just didn't. And so part of my blessing for me was to join the military. And my first assignment was overseas in Yokosuka, Japan. And I remember, you know, going from small sticks in Arkansas to a foreign country like Yokosuka, it was heaven itself. because I could drink. I didn't have to worry about my mom saying things like, why aren't you getting up going to church? Today is church. We're going to be praying for you. You know, when you drink, you just don't want to hear that type of talk. You really don't. There's something anti that goes against your drinking when your mom and others start talking about prayer and God. It's like, good Lord, leave me alone. It just hurt it, you know, because I think, as I'm talking right now, I think part of what hurt it was I knew I was doing wrong. And I didn't want to be reminded by my mom and talking about prayer. I just didn't. And so being in Cusco, you know, being a few continents away, I went for it. And, I really did. And almost got thrown into a Japanese prison because they accused me of burning down a couple Japanese bars. And I don't remember. But they said I did it. But I do remember that the person would not sell me any more. I was drinking Jack Daniels and Coke. They wouldn't sell me anymore. And I got mad and I got into a fight and I went to blackout. So, you know, maybe I did, maybe I didn't. But by God's grace, I did not go to the Japanese prison because there they put you away for a long time. And their meals are pretty healthy. It's rice and fish heads. And that's pretty much it. And so I'm very grateful that for whatever reason God saw fit that I didn't get locked up there. But that incident brought attention to the command I was in. And commander told me as soon as we pulled into the Republic of the Philippines, we had a naval base there, that they would give me some help. Personally, asked me if I thought I had a problem. And at that point, I didn't argue. I didn't say I didn't think so. I didn't know. At that point, the only word would come out of my mouth was yes. See, because I was ready. The only thing I knew was yes. Because I was hurting. All my score across the reading, zero. And no one ever asked me that magic question, did I think I need help? And so I thank God he asked me that, and I said, yes. He said, well, when we get in the Philippines, we'll drop you off there, and we'll put you in treatment. And I remember going to treatment, and I remember my counselor, there was about six counselors, and of course I was a very, very good manipulative type of drunk. I knew how to use, rule, manipulate, and discount, distort people. So it was six counselors, right? I sized all of them up. I said, you know, that one's easy, that one's easy, that one's easy. I hope I don't get Jerome. And guess what God had in store for me? Jerome, about 6'8", 230 pounds solid, and he just said, Al, you're in my group, and he just sort of smiled. And I went to kill him. Because I didn't understand what he's smiling about. And the whole time there in group, his methods of getting me to look at me, he just kept a smile on his face. I remember him saying, Al, you don't like yourself, do you? I thought, this man is crazy. And I got silent. I thought, well, what can I say? You know, because an alcoholic always got a comeback. And I said, well, why are you asking me that? He said, that's not what I asked you. He said, you don't like yourself, do you? And I got silent. Of course, all of a sudden, I got a cold. Eyes got glassy. Because those were tears trying to come up for the first time in my life. Probably about 10, 14 years, I hadn't cried, period. I was just that hard. He said, you don't like yourself, do you? And the only thing I could do is like a four-year-old boy to hold his head now and shake it side to side. And the tear and the snot came. And he just stood still smiling. He said, that's what I thought. He said, that's what I thought. He said, you know, Al, you're going to be all right. I can tell you that. And fast forward, the last day of graduation day, they gave us all comments and feedback. And again, he came up and hugged me and said, Al, you're going to make it. And I thank God today for his approach to me. What he did not do was, and I was good at fighting, He did not fight me. And I wanted him to fight me during group. I wanted him to come at me, but he did not do that. It was that big smile, and he just kept being very gentle with a very wounded, hurting child in an adult body. And I thank God also that they exposed us. They made us go to A meeting 6 nights a week. And I remember Angela at this Serenity Shack. I got a friend here tonight who's been to those places. Some of the things they would say to me, and after the meetings, we'd go out to Susie's and have Coke and ice cream and cake. And I remember going out the first week I was out of treatment, and the old-timer that went out with us, he said, "Al, what are you having?" I said, "Nothing." He said, "Come on." See, the thing was, he knew and I knew I was broke. But, you know, I was too proud that I didn't have any money. He said, "Al, what do you want?" And somehow these old-timers know these things. I don't know how they know these things, but somehow they know these things. He said, "What are you having?" I said, I'm okay. And he said, "Waiter, bring him some ice cream and cake." He said, "What type of ice cream?" I said, "Apple pie, black walnut." He said, "Okay," and some apple pie. And, you know, just those examples. Again, he is a composite of who I am. Because over the years, guess what I've done for other people? The same thing. You know, when we go out after the meetings, and I know the person perhaps don't have the money, and just and not shame them, but just sort of buy the meal, and just being very, very grateful for it, and they're thanking me, but they don't realize who I'm thanking in my heart, because the only reason I'm there is because somebody's done that for me. And that's part of how this program continues to work, and we continue to pass it on, because truly, 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 you know, I remember my early recovery, sometime after meetings like this, standing out in the parking lot for an hour and a half, the old timers talking to me because I was in so much pain, so much pain. And they talked to me until a couple hours or so. And they said, "Well, when you get home, do you have anything happen, man? You feel like you need to talk to me, give me a call." And I remember calling them up. I remember sometime going to a friend of mine in Fresno that's deceased now, Ron T, and calling him up at midnight and going up there and coffee pot be on, and we talked until the sun come up because I was in so much pain, see. And guess what I have done over the years when people needed to talk? I'm a composite of Ron T. I'll never forget his kindness, his gentleness, his willing to talk to me from midnight until the sun come up, sometimes two or three times a week. And so I thank God for those examples I've had in recovery. And, you know, one of the things that's been so important for me in my recovery is understanding that faith my parents used to talk about. You know, I rejected that when I was out there doing what I was doing, but I have no doubt that it was by God's grace, with other people's 12-step thing, and mama's prayer. That was, I couldn't say, I have no doubt. I remember when I got sober, early recovery, I would call my mom up and say, well, first of all, the first thing she would say is like, "Are you back in church?" And think, "Man, I'm a young man. I'm a sailor. I want to do some sailor young man thing." And she just kept on howling at me. And she could tell by my response, I said, "Well, Bob, I'm looking into it." And she would always, come back with that same answer. "Well, I'm praying for you." It's like, "Oh, my God, woman. You know, can't you just say something? Don't you have a conversation without the God stuff in there?" And, you know, if you raise Southern Baptists, they can't do that. They cannot do that. They have to always put that God stuff in there somewhere. And so by God's grace, you know, today it's like I've been able to make peace with that part of my life. And I've been able to realize that it truly is by God's grace. And there's an old song to talk about amazing grace. I was blind, but now I see. When I was drinking, I had these eyes, but I could not see. But today I can see. That song also talked about I was lost, but now I'm found. I really was lost out there. I really was. You can get so lost to where you're not the type of craziness that locked you up for, but your mind is, my mind was just evil. And so I was really, really lost out there. And I know the enemy of it, which is addiction, wanted to take me out. But, you know, by God's grace, now I've found who I am. And I absolutely, in a non-selfish sense, love who God has made me out to be. Absolutely love it. You know? Versus when I was out there, I totally rejected who I was. Could not stand. That's why I was drinking to kill myself. That's why I was drinking to where, if the cops came, you want some of me? Take me out, or I'll take you out. You know, trying to kill myself indirectly. And that's because of so much hurt, pain, and hate. So much. And when you're full of that stuff, God graces you on the people that are in your circle, in your home. Because I hurt a whole lot of people. And it was based on that hurt I had in here. Hurt and hate in here. And so therefore, I could not love my family members in a healthy way. Everything they did was wrong. Everything. Because it's interesting, because on a sick level, as I point these wrongs out to them, and they would squirm, on a sick level, it's like I got a rush from that. And again, it's all because of that being lost and broken and so full of much hurt I projected up yet on them. And I've made amends to those that I can make amends to. And the ones I can't, and I really work hard to treat people with decency and respect today, even ones that perhaps don't always deserve it. Because I know, again, if it wasn't for people, again, mom and others, still somehow loving me and, you know, praying for me, even when I was just raw, broke, I would say things to her, my mother, worth some help, that you shouldn't say to anyone. But I'd put them on her. And she would always, you know, sometimes she just, I could see in her face, obviously, and she would just always say, I'm going to keep praying for you. So, by God's grace today, you know, my parents are still alive. When I talk to my mom, today I always say, Mom, are you praying for me? And she'll say, of course I am. I don't ever stop. Don't ever stop. And I mean that. And I mean that. Because you can be in recovery and go nuts in recovery and not be drinking. And you can be working the steps, talking to the sponsor, doing all the things appropriately, and still somehow the spark plug wise get crossed and shoot fire in a misdirection. And the only thing I'm not doing now is I'm not drinking, but I'm walking around crazy up here. And so don't ever stop, Mom. You know, whenever your son comes to your heart, get on your knees. Please. Please. That is a miracle for me to turn about like that. Because again, I know that even today, with coming up on 32 years, I need all the help I can get. I know that today. And sobriety has brought many, many blessings in my life. And I give the credit to some of the people I've already mentioned, and also for ones around these tables I have not known. Because some of the many blessings, again, we were so poor when I was a kid, and they still do it today when they go out, people dig in the dumpsters, they call it dumpster diving today. But in Arkansas, we go to the city dump. And that's how we got some of our food and stuff that they threw away when the cans were bent and stuff, and you couldn't sell it on the shelf. That's how we got some of our food. That's how we got some of our clothes. And we also got once a month commodities. If you any know what that stuff is, a couple of heads are nodding. But yeah, that's some good stuff too. Meat and gravy. But we got that. And very, very poor to where, having grocery boxes on throw the place on the house to keep the wind out. Windows broken because it was cement. That's what you get, breaking the windows. You know, so that's why they got broken. But very, very poor. But it's interesting as I think about it, because in spite of all of that, Mama stayed on her knees. All that. And all of us made it through that. And, you know, part of my journey was, again, I got sober, and I wanted to be just like Jerome. If he could love me unconditionally, I wanted to be just like him. So I stayed sober for a couple of years. I went to Navy Drug and Alcohol Counsel School, and my friend there tonight, he's been and done the same thing. So I became a Navy Drug and Alcohol Counselor and a Navy Drug and Alcohol Director of about four different Navy programs prior to retiring from the Navy in 94. And, you know, by God's grace, I was able to work as a counselor in Italy and Japan and the Bay Area and on a couple of ships, USS Orion. And by God's grace, you know, this poor person coming from the background I came from, God privileged me with visiting at least and spending anywhere from 5 to 7 days in at least 14 different countries and just absolutely and doing this sober. See, because when I was on the ship and pulling these different countries, most of my shipmates, at least 85% of them, if we were there for 5 days, guess what they went out and did? I won't use that Navy language, but they would go out and they get helped up, period. And then they asked me what I did. And I tell them, what's this Navy meeting? They said, what? You did what? I said, I had a problem. And I did that, and I went to orphanages in different countries with the chapel. We worked at orphanages and fed the kids and played the kids and stuff. Man, that's crazy. They would tell me what I did was crazy compared to what they were doing. And, God also blessed me to where I had the privilege of starting meetings in at least four, one in Japan, one in Italy, and one on board a ship. When I was stationed, there was no AA meeting, and I remember what I was taught. I remember what the big book said. The big book talks about, I think it was World War II when it broke out, and a few soldiers, something to this degree, don't throw your big book at me if I get off track a little bit and misquote it. I know some of you out there thinking, oh, here we go. If you don't get it right, I'll stand outside. But they talk about when World War II broke out, that soldiers were scattered in different places, and little meetings popped up here and popped up there. And, you know, by God's grace, I was able to be in a continuation of that by starting meetings at St. Peter's in Tokyo, Japan, at the church there, and in Italy, and on a ship. And I did what I did because I was taught to do that. You know, they told me if I went to a place that wasn't a meeting, start a meeting. And so I had my big book. I talked to the people in charge of different buildings or churches and asked them if I could start a meeting. They said, sure. And there were many, many nights when I was there by myself, but that was okay. See, because that enabled me to be here tonight. You know, I was into action. I was doing that which I was taught to do. And I still do that. But, you know, for God to take one of a small battalion of 12, those four than dirt, and allow him to experience what I, by God, could have experienced, how can I not be grateful? You know, how can I not be grateful? I am grateful. I'm still excited about my recovery. I absolutely love sobriety. I look forward to each day regardless of the stuff in life. You know, stuff in life is going to be there. But I still look forward to each day because, again, by God's grace, sobriety has been very, very good to me. In spite of the stuff, what the old timers taught me was, Al, don't get locked. Don't let Al get locked into the stuff. Get out of yourself. And somehow the stuff will, you'll put stuff in perspective. But if you get within yourself, you'll make the stuff, you'll blow it out of proportion. And it's amazing for me how that works. It's absolutely amazing. And so, if, you know, stuff, and stuff happens in his life, whether it's financial, health, you name it. The thing I do is I try to work with a newcomer, or go to a meeting and work with somebody, and it always amazed me again at how it just, it makes my stuff, it puts it in perspective. And I have to do that, because I still have the type head to where my disease want to take whatever the stuff is and really multiply it. You know, about 2 months ago, I went to my eye doctor because of floaters in the left eye, and because my head told me, uh-oh, here we go, they're going to replace your eye, maybe your head too. The head would be a bad thing, but the eye and of course, you know, we were the same certain age. It's not much you can go to the doctor and tell you the same thing when they look at you. They always say, well, you're just getting a little bit older. And they do make every time I go to the doctor nowadays, they don't want to mess with me. They say, well, you're getting a little bit older. And I said, well, that's what happens to some people, you know, when you get a certain age and blah, blah, blah. But nope, there's no problem. And but it's amazing how my head just blows it up. You know, I got arthritis in my hips about a year ago. It just comes and goes every now and then, but I thought first I thought, they're going to have to take my hip off. You know, just went to my doctor, and she just said, well, she's just getting a little bit old. That's like, anybody else got any more solutions? But I thank God today that I'm able to laugh about things like that. I thank God today that I can laugh, period. Because when I came in here, I was telling my friend before we got started, when I first came in, I looked around, people were laughing about stuff, and I'm thinking, what's so blanky funny? What are they laughing about? You know, because when you're new in recovery, the people that have been here for a while, they speak an unknown language. And you really can't pick it up. You really, really can't initially. Because you think they're crazy. You just don't get it. Somebody's talking about this, and you think, oh, my God, that's trouble. And with the next breath, they start laughing about it. And you think, what? My goodness. But, you know, the joy of laughter today, because truly, when I came in here, all the scorecards were zero. Bankrupt in every department. And I saw these people laughing, and I knew they had some problems. And I was bad, but not that bad. And they said, just keep coming back. And today, you know, it's like I was sure at a meeting the other day, we say some of the darnest things around these rooms. And how can you not laugh? We say some of the darnest things. Like Mark Linklater used to talk about how the kids say some of the darnest things. I know some of you don't remember him either. But and some of you do. Because you nod your head. I can tell by the color of your hair, you understand. So I said, thanks. That's one of the traits of being from the South, too. You just sort of say things at times. You know, you don't mean any harm. You just sort of say things. And, but, you know, I've been in California long enough, out in California long enough to know that you say certain things, everyone either chew you or shoot you. They just don't get it. You know, in Arkansas, we just sort of, we're free with ourselves. We think it, we don't mean harm, we just say stuff. But out here, people are, what? What do you mean? You can't say that, you hurt my self-esteem. But truly, you know, as I wrap up my time of sharing it, it's a blessing to be a part of this organization, because I've learned that not only is it important for me to practice these principles around these tables, it's easy to work my A program here. It's extremely easy. I can do it in REM Sleep 4. But out there, and I've gotten a whole lot better out there. A whole lot better. And I've learned how to, I don't have to be right all the time. I don't have to try to tell other people about their side of the street. You know, even though it's got stuff, I don't have to do that. I can let them discover that. I don't have to, you know, when I go to function, people are enjoying themselves with whatever bevels they have. And they ask me if I want something, I don't have to put my big AA letters on my chest and say, no, I'm in AA. I used to say that when I was new, I can today just say, no thanks, not tonight. And allow them to enjoy themselves, and I enjoy myself, you know? Because when I used to say that, I know today what I was doing. I was boasting, you know, trying to elevate myself. And so this program has taught me a whole lot about how just to live. And what it really taught me is that the principles aren't that unique. You know, again, the old family, everything we know, we learned in kindergarten. I have truly learned that. It's like AA has somehow helped me to put on my recovery glasses, but all the things that I needed to do life have always been out there. Always. And AA gave me a pair of recovering glasses so I can see things. So, my time has come and gone, and when Bill asked me to speak, I thought, 40 minutes? How can I speak for 40 minutes? Now I'm getting a little resentment. It's like, you know, I can go on. That Southern Arkansas stuff, it kicked in. And you, if you're a Baptist, you can look first in the podium and then go, it's like a little preacher. They go, you go all day. I don't think they ever talk about much, but they go all day. And so...
You have five more for
them. I guess, okay.
I'll take it.
But, you know, for the people that came up tonight and picked up their chips, I cannot overemphasize, regardless of how much time, that it's a miracle to have your chips, to be your sober. I often hesitate to tell people how much time I've been around this program, because when I do, they will come back verbally and minimize God's gift. When I tell them I got such and such years, they'll say, I only got a month. See, that's minimizing the gift of sobriety. And I believe firmly that it's by God's grace and help that person got a month or 2 days or whatever. So when they say, I only got, you know how many people out there really would love to have 24 hours? And 30 days is heaven. But you hear people say, I only got 30 days. It's like, oh my goodness. And I always tell them too, I don't ever minimize that blessing. Because it really, really, really is. You see, because I don't take what I've been given for granted. I really don't. But I really do try to represent the ones that have come before me. And again, a lot of them are at that big meeting. But I always see them. As I'm looking out, I don't see any empty chairs. I can still see their faces, you know? And so part of me, it's like all of us, we're extension of AA, we can continue to grow. I want to continue to pass on that which was so freely given to me, so freely. And it was because of, from a Christian perspective, mercy and grace, because I definitely didn't earn it. I mean, people should have capped my butt many, many times. I'm serious. And I would have capped myself if I knew how. But because I did so many crazy things. But it's by God's grace and mercy that I'm sober and the people he has put in my path. And for that, I will always be grateful. And for that, whenever I'm called upon to serve, whether it's around the tables of Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it's called on to go out in the neighborhood and give food out on certain days in my church, it just doesn't matter. See? Because again, I'll never forget where I've come from and that which has been done for me along the journey. And, you know, the old saying, and I'll say this to stop, but the old saying, the more you give, the more you get. I find that so true in recovery. The example I was using earlier, when I'm in my mess, I'm sinking. But when I give to other people and talk about whatever they want to talk about, I'm getting. And they always tell me things like, Al, thank you for just talking to them. I'm thinking, thank me, thank you, because you pulled me out of my mess. It was just the fact that my tires, and I need to change my tires in another month, but my mind took off. How are you going to afford four cars? How are you going to do that? And I'm thinking about suicide, you know, because of the four cars. You know? Bizarre! Just like that! You know, just like that. Now, some of you know what I'm talking about. Nothing is bizarre. And so, I thank God today for mercy and grace, and I thank God for you all. And again, keep coming back, and also get into action. Get into action. We can sit around these tables for a while and enjoy the camaraderie, but there comes a point. In order to get away from that selfishness, self-centered, self-willed one right, that we think is the root of our problem, driven by 100 forms of fear, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate, and selfishness will also kill us. In order to break that, I have to get involved in other people's lives. That's amazing. It's just that simple. I mean, it's so magic here. We're just going to share it with a sense of hope. So I want to thank you, and thank you for asking me to share tonight, and just say once again, stick around and realize the blessings be around. Thanks.